Welcome back to episode 3 of Room Techers. We're coming to you this Sunday, November 12th, 2017. Joined alongside Mickey, Brendan McAdams. As always, we're here to give you guys some soccer talk. Thank you guys for all of you who have followed us, who downloaded our episodes, checked us out, subscribed on iTunes right now. This is so cool to us that we're finally on there. We're making sure that we get these shows to you guys consistently, and hopefully we're talking about some interesting topics. We know that we were trying to get a guest on today's show to talk to you about one of the big topics we got, the U.S. Soccer Federation's presidential election. We won't go too far into it because, to be completely honest, it's still confusing as hell to both of us. But there's a lot to unpack, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We got some World Cup qualifiers and how that stacks up to the U.S. not qualifying. And a look ahead into next weekend, due to the international break we have now and some derbies we might see coming up. Thanks for joining us today. How are we feeling?
Hey, Matt. Nice to be here.
Great to be here. Sunday afternoons, Sunday evenings always feel great. Take a little bit of a break from the American football. Talk a little bit about the European. But before we get across the pond, we'll stay here. A little domestic.
Some domestic European football.
Yeah, there we go. So we got the U.S. Soccer Federation's president. Now, the election's coming up. So, Gulati is the current, is the incumbent right now.
He's the only one I ever remember.
He's the only one I ever remember. And a number of people in the industry have come out and said a ton of stuff about the way he has currently run the organization. He's done, from an economic standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, and marketing encompassing the growth of the league in general, like all good things. He's done a lot of good things. He has done a lot of not good things.
I mean, Atlanta FC is probably like the best example of what he's done.
Correct. And their revenue has increased a lot under him as well, which is obviously great. But we got a number of people. I can't remember how many people exactly are running for this right now, but
I've seen about a dozen names.
A dozen names. And we have here, I'm looking at an article on the medium.com from Anthony DiCiccio, the son of the great Tony DiCiccio. He passed recently, but he has a fantastic article about the sort of breakdown of who actually votes in this election, and it's pretty incredible.
It's not great.
Not great at all because, I won't say not great. It just sets it up for so much bias, and it gives a lot of advantage to the incumbent, to Gulati himself, because he, as someone who has been there for a number of years, appoints a number of people who have votes in tie-breaking. Basically, that breaks down what we can discern from this long document. There's so much, it's ridiculous. Basically, what we can discern is that there's eight or nine groups, actually. They're broken up into like five groups of delegates. Now, there's a total adjusted vote of people who actually vote for this of 1,135. Now, the actual delegates are only 534, meaning there's like an adjusted rate for those councils, basically, that they have who actually vote in these elections. So, for example, there's a youth council, an adult council, which encompasses those interests of youth teams, adult teams. Then there's the professional council, which has to do with like MLS representatives, like basically a board from each of the leagues in the professional system in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's an athletes council, which is basically a select number of former or current athletes who represent the interests of United States soccer. And then there's like an other section, basically like life members they consider, like national delegates, and like past presidents each get to vote up to, I think, 12. There's like a number that they can, there's only a limit of those that they can reach. So basically there's all of these groups. They encompass a total delegate number of like 530, and that gets adjusted to like 1,100 actual votes that get counted. So that means that, so there's like, I'll give you an example. So the Athletes Council has four actual delegates. So there's actually four players who are able to vote.
Okay.
However, their voting power is a multiplier of 57. So basically,
this is one of the dumbest, like having you walk me through this system makes no goddamn sense.
So like, it's basically a matter of the athletes, like in their bylaws, it states that like athletes, the people who represent the athletes should make up for at least 20% of the vote. So I'm not arguing whether or not the 20% is wrong, because I think that that's cool. Like, I mean, the athletes have some sort of interest in, they have something to gain or lose. Yeah, they have something to gain or lose if their team gets screwed out of, you know, playing a certain way or being in a certain league. So, however, only four of those. So you think about that. That total adjusted is what, 1,100. And I just said that there's only four actual delegates, which means that their voting power is like a multiplier of 57. Yeah. So they actually, when the actual votes get counted, they account for 228 of those votes with those four guys. And the system that they get elected with is pretty messed up. But I digress. So basically, there's a lot to unpack.
We don't have promotion and relegation.
Nope.
We have playoffs. We don't have a Champions League-esque, but we got the corruption.
We got the corruption.
We got the corruption.
And it's not necessarily that there is. It's that there's so, it's so easy that,
I mean,
there
it's
could
not
be.
Corruption as in, oh, what you're doing is illegal and you're breaking rules. It's like, oh, you guys made an awful system that empowers select amount of individuals to make really big decisions that are probably going to take a really long time to fix.
Yeah, and now that we have enough, like I had said in the beginning, that there's a number of people like Eric Wynalda and Kyle Martino who were analysts, like very well known, very respected analysts, former players. They're like fantastic people, in my opinion. I don't necessarily agree. Like, whatever you think of them as analysts is, you know, by the wayside. But I do believe that they carry a lot of weight in terms of the public eye. They are very involved on an international, a domestic level, and they know what the hell they're talking about. And I know Kyle Martino, he's a younger guy. I don't think he's around maybe 40 years old. He's running for president right now, and
got
he's
some gray in the beard.
He's got a little chiseled gray, but he's more of like an idealist, and his main platform is not one person is not going to change the way that the United States changes its ways, I guess. Our youth team is doing well. I think there was the U-17 World Cup that just happened, and we made it to, what, the semifinals?
Yeah. I think Brazil ended up winning that.
England did.
England did?
England beat Brazil. But regardless, I mean, it's, you look at, from a systematic level, you take objectively, go, oh, look, like, what's wrong with U.S. soccer? Is it because the MLS sucks? Is it because we just have too many players playing in different leagues and they don't mesh together? Like, that English concept, complex that they had for a number of years, where we're like, why is England, or same with France, sorry. France is like, why are they playing so poorly? It's like, oh, well, none of them play in the same team ever. They play in different systems. You put them all together in the same field, then it's like, oh, they just don't work. It doesn't work. So,
and then the German system is like, all right, here's a 10-year plan. We're going to do this for 10 years. Everybody's going to do it.
Yep. And we're going to win.
And they won a World Cup.
And they're definitely
one of the, that might be something you want to look into.
And they're definitely one of the favorites to win it again.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't shut up about it the other day.
No.
You, like, won the Confederations Cup with, like, a U-23 team.
Well, they did.
They did.
They did.
You're not wrong.
They did. So I'm interested to see, and I guess, I'm trying to think of exactly what I want. I want out of this. The pro relegation is obviously
big picture big, stuff. I'm big not going to get weighed down in some minutia right now.
No, small time stuff. It's like, oh, I know that one of the big problems is that the women's leagues are very underrepresented, especially looking at how well the on an international scale we match up. I mean, our women's
team. The rest of the world is kind of catching up too. So like,
yeah,
this is. We only really have this, I think, for a little bit longer.
And I think, and I know that like, Manchester United is one of the only teams in England who does not have a women's team right now, and they're under fire for that. And I think, deservedly so.
Yeah,
you're a club that big. What is so slow in Manchester that they don't think that they need that?
Yeah, and I mean, I see the Liverpool account tweeting about their women's team all the time.
Chelsea, same with Man City. I follow them too. But I know that women in particular, especially at the professional level in this election, are very underrepresented too. We were like taking a look at the actual breakdown, and it's basically like there's a professional council made of 14 people. They represent each of the leagues, and they get voting power based off of the competitive division. So I don't really know what that means. We were talking about this.
What does that mean?
We don't know what competitive division means, but in my head, when I think of competitive division, if you're comparing MLS, MLS is the highest level that you can play in the male sport of soccer in the United States. And the NWSL is the highest level that you can play in the United States from a women's perspective. So if you're comparing,
sound like equals to me.
It sounds like they should be based off, if it's off of competitive, if you're dividing it based off of competitiveness for a man versus a woman, the NWSL should also have the exact same amount of votes as the MLS. That is not the case. That is not what actually happens. The MLS actually garners or receives about 69% of the total votes from a professional council, which in turn translates to about 15 or 16%.
Multiple factor out of the 1,100,
which is about 15% of the total vote. And from a women's perspective, I think they get like I think they get 5.5% of the total vote.
So the player, like we were talking about earlier, the players have 20%. The MLS alone has 15%, and then is it the NWSL or is it just like kind of like and they have 5%,
like and the ruling, the reason that this was also, so I will make the caveat that this was last election. This wasn't this. I don't know if these are all going to be the exact same rules in this upcoming election. Can't imagine there's going to be too much change. However, that is to note that this is not set in stone for the exact specifications of what the voting is going to be like. However, real quickly, the breakdown basically with the adjusted voting strength, I guess, for the youth council, which represents all youth systems in the United States, they get 291 of those votes. Mm-hmm. There's two other groups that get those exact same amount of adjusted votes. The adult council also gets that, and the professional council. So they all get that 25-27% of the total vote. Then you have the athletes council, which accounts for, in their bylaws it says they should get at least 20% of the total vote. So those four players account for 20% of the freaking vote. And then your other members get, I think, 34. It's like it's a very small fraction. They're 1-to-1 ratio. So 1,135 total votes. So I think that it's cool. I think that it's important for people to understand how complicated this election is and honestly how much this favors the incumbent Gulati actually to stay. He has not announced whether or not he's going to be rerunning for election. He also has not said the opposite. And if he runs, I think he still carries the best chance because of the system that he has set up around himself. And like I said, it's not like a dictator corruption thing. It's not necessarily, but I don't think that he necessarily has the best interests for U.S. soccer moving forward in mind at all.
Well, I don't like that makes it sound like he's really just trying to like maximize. Like he definitely has a vision for it. Like you don't just do that job to like screw over like a people. But I just doesn't seem like they're heading in the right direction. Like youth development. I mean, from when we were kids, to even before, like, the club system has gotten totally out of hand. It's like they're like, I remember when club teams, there's like there's only a handful in the area, and like you had to be a special player to like get on that team. You pay and like you paid a little, and now it's just like, all right, everybody plays club soccer, everybody goes to tournaments, and it's just there's not like everything. There's nothing constructive going on. It's just all right, yeah. Everybody lump you just, in there. Just do this in your spring and summer. It'll look good for your high school coaches. Like $2,000, please.
Yeah,
no other country in the world does it like that.
No, and I think I will note that I think that the pro rel question to people who are deciding to run, I think it's an unfair question. Just out of nowhere, be like, yes or no, because it's not just the decision of the president. Sure, you have to have an agenda of I will if Kyle Martino right now or Eric Guanalo or even Gulati was just like, I agree and I think that in a number of years implementing the pro relegation system in the United States is a thing.
Within 15 years.
Maybe. However, it's not up to that. It's not just up to them. They do have a lot of power, and whether or not that's a thing. But I think that I keep seeing that. It's like, do you support this? Do you want this? Like, I have a direct question, yes or no. It's like, yeah, sure. Like, I can agree with that. Like, but it doesn't mean that it's just the dream of one president of this organization. I mean, in general, I think that the pro relegation system, I think that this is a pivotal time in U.S. soccer where if they did implement it, then I think it would be smart.
Yeah, and what goes along with the pro promotion relegation is that these teams that you, like, these smaller teams in their own communities, like, actually have something to build towards. And, I mean, you see it when I don't know, like, I think it was, like, Blackpool a while back, like, they started, and then they win up, like, 4 divisions, Leipzig. And, like, so, yep, and it's something that I'd imagine you start to care about. It's like, oh, wait, like, we could have a professional sports team, like, a first
division, a real one,
yeah. A real sports team, like, in our city, like, That's how.
Yeah, like who wants to go to Blackpool? Well, if you have, if you know that there's a sports team there, maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, I mean, when we're talking about growing soccer, when you have, you need to have fans that care. And yeah. When you have fans that care, those kids are going to want to, they're going to want to do what they see on the television, do what they see on Saturdays and Sundays when they go to the games. Like, that's how you're going to grow soccer.
And I think it needs to be more of an integration into the way that it's played. And I agree very much so like that, where I'm playing club soccer at the age of 15 or something like that with like a development team. If that's like the lowest tier of a professional team, like you have that trickle down ownership sort of thing. Like, I know we do have the affiliate teams here in the United States, like the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, I think, or Chicago Fire affiliate in the MLS.
But that doesn't tell you what the Revs team was.
Yeah, no. But that's not good.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not good. And then it's not like the Riverhounds could ever be in the MLS. They would have to be like ushered into the MLS. It would be like an expansion team. It wouldn't be like you earned your place here. It's we have a bigger market area for
you. A very rich person wants to run a soccer team. So
yes, not someone who cares about football. You don't have soccer minded people. Yeah. And you're at, all right, I'll rephrase that. I said, you don't have enough soccer minded people in the administration for the USSF right now. And I think that if you changed it a little bit, that just slowly changed that dynamic to, yeah, I do agree that Galati has done a lot from a financial standpoint and from a growth standpoint. However, it's taken a lot of steps back in terms of quality soccer development in the United States.
We're not playing in the World Cup.
No. We're not in the goddamn World Cup. Think about that from if you want to compare this time last World Cup, we were being compared with like some of the top teams in the world.
Yeah, we were.
We weren't there. But we were. We stuck with Portugal. We only lost 1-0 to Germany in that group of death. We made it out. We beat Ghana. Had never beaten them before. We stuck with Belgium. Sure, it required like a record breaking amount of saves from Timmy Howard. But like to say, nonetheless, we had still done enough and prepared enough and played enough to compete in that level. And now we're not even in the conversation.
I just thought we were past this.
Yes.
And think about that. And looking back on it, like that's like wildly arrogant, just be like, oh yeah, obviously, like we're gonna be in the World Cup. Like, but if you look at some of the draws and losses that we had, like this,
it's terrible.
It was awful. It was just like awful mindset. We let go of Klinsmann.
I don't know. I still don't know what I think of that. I don't think that
Bruce Arena was the answer.
No.
I mean, 2020, all that, but like, what were we looking for here?
I don't know. And you said that it sounds arrogant to say that, but I don't think it is. That was our first World Cup we haven't made since, what was it, 80-something?
88, maybe.
It might have been 88 or 84, something like that. But regardless, the definition, like, by definition, your World Cup. It was, whatever. But we still haven't gotten a stats guy. But, by definition, every World Cup that's had 32 teams, if you're in that World Cup, that's an elite team. Like, you're an elite team by definition. You're one of the top 32 teams in the world if you make it to that World Cup. CONCACAF
is one of the easiest regions, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
To confederations to qualify out of.
There's no excuse in my head.
It's embarrassing.
And
it's terrible.
And if you want to continue that dialogue of, look, the U.S. is an elite country or international team, maybe not your MLS. I still think that the MLS has a long way to go before you consider it an elite league. However, if you want to be held to that standard, think about if an EPL team, if you're a coach, if you're someone who owns this team and they don't like qualify for something and you have that poor of a performance as a team and as an administration, you get rid of it in England. Like, how often do, like, we were talking last time about how Zidane's on the hot seat now because Real Madrid has, like, a slight dip in form. It's like, you have that standard that you've set it to. You dip below that standard, and people start asking questions. And at this point, it's, you didn't make the World Cup, and we didn't even, like, we played, like, I'm not going to go there. We played terrible. I don't think we deserve to be in the World Cup.
I don't remember watching a game being like, oh, yeah, like, we can make a run. Like, I was like, oh, like, I feel something in this team. Every time, I was like, ooh.
And I think that should be, with that, my whole long analogy with the comparison of an England or a Real Madrid being held to that certain standard in general. If you're held to a certain standard and then something catastrophic like not making the World Cup happens, that means it's time to change. it's time to get rid of whoever is responsible.
Not like a short-term fix.
Correct.
Like something like...
Not Bruce Arena.
Not Bruce Arena. Like, it has to be like a... Like, you can't even really worry... I mean, obviously you want to qualify for the next World Cup, but like, you can't be thinking about that one. Like, at this point, you have to be thinking about like 2028.
Yeah.
You're going to have a... You should have a whole new wave of players that have been developed, hopefully in some sort of organized system with a playing style in mind.
And it's not that you don't have quality players in the United States.
No.
At all. We could have... I do believe, if coached correctly, if given the means to do so, that that U.S. team could still have been a knockout stage team in the World Cup.
Yeah.
I think that you had... I think that Bruce Arena coming in, he too heavily relied on too many old players and not enough of the new players. And then the times that he did play the new players, he was throwing in like 18-year-olds on the wing to start. And you're like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I'm mixing experience with, like, new. It's like, dude, this isn't the time to experiment, man. You need to freaking win.
Yeah.
And only until the last 15 minutes, we were watching that game against Trinidad and Tobago. Only until the last 15 minutes when someone told Arena on the sidelines that, holy shit, you're literally in a position right now. I gave him an update for the scores that were going on and said, oh, my God, like, you're out. Like, right now, as of right now, you guys are out. Then you started to see him push his players. Then you saw the shots on goal. Then you saw the U.S. team that you're like, dude, why didn't you play like that for 90 minutes? There's no urgency.
I forgot how frustrating that game was.
And so, a new president getting elected right now could be and should be a wake-up call and a pivotal change in the U.S. soccer. And like you said, it's not like tomorrow I want to hear Gulati's rolling out a plan for the next year about pro realm, like rushing it. I don't want that.
No.
And you shouldn't want that.
No.
But it does to me at least, indicate that this is time for some change. This is so embarrassing on an international level, especially as a team who has been emerging. And we need to fix it. And yeah, the Soccer Federation presidential election is confusing as shit. There's so much to unpack in that. I couldn't even understand. I couldn't even articulate all of it to you right now. But like, there's so much going on with it. And I think that as a fan, first of all, I also wanted to pose the question, should the fans have any sort of voice in the election?
Nah, fans are dumb.
Fans are dumb?
Yeah.
You have groups like American Outlaws that are systematically organized. I don't know. I always thought that it would be cool that fans should have some sort of... I mean, if you talk about... And I'm going to go like way on a limb here. You talk about America as a democracy where even the little people have a say.
Mm-hmm.
And your most passionate people in your sport, your fans, don't get any vote, really.
Well, I'd imagine that a group like American Outlaws, I'd imagine there's a dialogue between them and USSF. And I think that is about where it should be. Like, for me, like, I think that there should be a relationship there, and I definitely think that, like, the fans' feelings should be made heard.
Sure.
But I don't, like, I mean, I'm trying to think of a group out of those five groups, like, who I'd want to have less representation for fans.
Well, think about it. There's no, like, when you think about who is voting for who is voting in this election, let me try and phrase this in, like, one sentence. You have no one, like, no one's electing this person. It's... In our normal political world, the idea in a perfect democratic world, it's, look, we elected you, you're not representing us. In this world, it's, these systems are in place and we have these people, and it's trickle down rather than bottom up.
Yeah, and I mean, that was my biggest problem with what little I understood of that article, is that so many of these positions are appointments.
Yep.
Whereas I think that should be from those grassroots organizations up, from the youth delegation, the adult delegation, and all of that. Like, those people should be selecting who they want higher up.
Right.
And I think that seems like a pretty easy thing to implement. I don't know, to me. So...
And I don't know.
I'd rather see something along the lines of that than bringing in a whole other new voice.
Right. Because then I think that would solve your... Look, we have, like, our fans have a dialogue about what we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, like, that's important. I think that's
where
important.
Fans can go, too. I mean, you can go to your youth... Oh my god, I'm just thinking about like soccer politics and like town soccer. I really threw up. But I think that's where fans' voices can really be heard if they kind of flip this and make it much more of like a grassroots first and then build up from there.
Because your fans are your fans aren't not the most important part of it, but it's I think that they should hold more, a little bit more weight, and I think that that would be a good way to do it. But yeah, and then you have there's still some qualifiers left for not all 32 teams have made it, or it's not solidified yet for it, and one of the big ones is Sweden, Italy. They play tomorrow.
Yeah,
and my question is, who's worse off if they don't qualify? Is it the U.S.? Like, is it worse for Italy or worse for the United States that they didn't qualify? Italy has not yet not qualified. But just saying, if they lose tomorrow, they don't.
Yeah, they're losing 1-0 on aggregate, and they're playing at home tomorrow.
So they have to score two, or they have to take the advantage of two. So I personally think, I don't know. It's to me, it's you have the U.S. making, like, climbing toward the top, just doing better and better and better. Every couple years you're seeing that. And Italy, on the other hand, is always, like, I don't think that there has been, other than maybe last World Cup, there wasn't really a question of, there was always the idea of Italy could make the final this year, or Italy could make the semis. Like, they're usually, at least in my lifetime, up like I said, up until maybe last World Cup, they were in that conversation of, look, they could make a run easily.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not, like, I mean, obviously it's not a good look for Italy if they don't make it, but it's not the end of the world for them at all. I mean, they don't have to worry about people not caring about soccer. Like, they don't have to worry about, like, kids not watching the watching their national team because, like, they didn't make the World Cup. Like, I'm going to go watch basketball instead. Like, that's not going to happen with Italy. Like, United States, like, the soccer's kind of in its, like, adolescence right now. Like, as a country. Stunning growth. Like, and exactly. It's like we just got two of our, like, growth plates shattered.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Not great. But then again, from the other side of it, it's Italy, I can't remember if or when the last time they didn't make the World Cup was.
I'm kind of thinking of it how England didn't qualify for Euros in 2008, and that was a disaster. Like, you had Lampard and Gerrard in his prime. I mean, that whole golden generation that everybody talked about, and they didn't win a single thing. Like, and I think that a country like Italy with their federation, if they don't qualify, then they can, I think that they're more likely to pull a Germany, take a step back and be like, all right, what do we want our identity as a soccer team to be? What do we have to change? What didn't work? And like, I don't have the same faith in the American federation to fix it.
And yeah, I agree. I agree. That's fine. That's just weird. I still can't imagine.
It's going to be really weird if Italy isn't in the World
Cup. No Italy, no U.S. Morocco made it yesterday.
No Netherlands,
yeah. I read some crazy stat that Morocco didn't concede a single goal in qualifiers.
That's what's awesome about soccer, though. Yeah. It's like a couple of, like, these, like, Egypt has been on a tear. Morocco has been on a tear. Like,
cool. Like, good. Yeah.
I mean, the level, South American teams have been playing out of their mind.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first time I didn't watch soccer when I was younger. So I'm just seeing in terms of, like, Brazilian teams, like, I've never really seen Brazil, like, I've seen them get really close, and then it's like, they're not really clicking, they don't have enough responsibility, they're all divas.
Yeah.
And this time around, it's like, oh my god. So, I know that we're not, like, I mean, I'm still going to be watching, but I was always going to be watching. It's all the Americans that aren't going to tune in for God knows what time the games are going to be on in Russia.
Yep.
But I don't think nobody's going to do that.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. But that opens now another 4 years for someone like Pulisic to develop your younger players to get better. Obviously, you did have a good showing in the U-17 World Cup, made the semis, and they look pretty good, too. I don't know if you got a chance to watch any of it, but they look pretty good, too. And there's just a lot more potential with the United States now, having players who go over.
I'm curious to see what happens with these U-17 players. Like, are they going to go to college?
Yeah. They staying here?
Or are they looking around and being like, nah, screw it. Like, I'm going to go try out with teams anywhere, really.
And there's a number of Americans in Europe that people don't, like, talk about.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't list them right now.
Matt Miazga for Chelsea is a center back. He's, like, 19 or something like that. And the Vitesse is basically, like, Chelsea's second team. He plays over there.
But, I mean, he's still there. I mean, and those Chelsea kids, like, always bounce around. He'll get loaned out to wherever that feeder club you guys use. Yeah. It begins with a V.
Yeah, Vitesse. Yeah. Cameron Carter-Vickers is on Tottenham. He just renewed a new 4-year deal with them.
Mm-hmm. So it's there. They're getting there.
And he's a little older. I think he's like 20, 21, and he's a monster. And so you have younger players, even in Europe, even in England right now. I mean, and a team like Tottenham is sick, and they play Arsenal in the next weekend. I don't think he'll be playing, but like, I mean, that's an important game. That's Derby week.
If he starts, though, you heard it here first.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. But Tottenham Arsenal is going to be a good game 2 weeks from now. This upcoming weekend, because there was an international break.
Am I right?
Yeah, they saved the screaming out, dude. It's that European American time. I can't do it.
That's awful.
Tottenham Arsenal. Who you thinking? That's in a week.
I think Tottenham's gonna run through them.
Yeah,
I have very minimal faith in Arsenal right now. I'm sure that somebody's gonna get hurt on international break before they come back.
Groin injury.
If it's like, I don't know. I feel that Wenger's job's been speculated about, like, for so long.
Yep.
For so many years at this point, I don't even know what he'd have to do to not have that job anymore. But I mean, what if they get embarrassed by Tottenham? What if Harry Kane hat trick, Dele Alli just lights it up?
I think that Wenger should not have re-signed his contract. That's just a lot of people feel that way. Even Arsenal fans feel that way. And our friend Tommy was like, I don't know why he signed the extra year contract. But like,
was it a 2-year extension or a 1-year extension?
I think it was just a year extension.
Once you start getting down to those 1-year extensions, that's kind of telling everybody like, I don't know how this is going to go, but we're going to give it another shot.
I don't think Arsenal has enough. I don't think they have enough strength in their spine to compete with Tottenham's.
Xhaka hasn't been who they wanted it to be.
Mm-mm. They're who, like, center backs. I mean, you have Mustafi, he's a decent center back. Good, yep. He's really good, but you can't just have one.
Yeah.
Bellerin has been hot cold. Bellerin's honestly been like either fantastic or non-existent.
All I know is that those rumors to Spain have died considerably. Yep. So
Monreal.
That's usually a good way to determine if somebody's been
playing
well or not.
Monreal has had had a good last. He had a fantastic. He was their best.
It's not their problem. He's
no
7.5 out of 10 defender. Yeah. Like,
but you got Mustafi, and that's it. They try and play the three back sometimes. They're not that great at it. and then you have Tottenham, who has been on top of it this season. Them and Man City have been the two best teams out of England this year by far. Man City's still over Tottenham, but Tottenham nonetheless.
They haven't played yet, right?
No. I don't know. I don't remember. If they have, I don't remember.
I can't remember.
But Tottenham definitely well equipped for longevity. And I know Pochettino, rumors for him leaving. But
yeah, they haven't played yet.
I don't think that he's going to leave. He's such a good coach. I like Pochettino a lot.
I agree.
Yeah. And Tottenham's playing well. They're a good team. I think they're the only team that can really challenge Man City right now.
Yeah. I agree.
I think Tottenham wins is like 3-1 or 3-0 or something.
Back to Arsenal though. You got your two best players last year's of their contract. Neither of them are re-signing. You have your coach who's been there forever.
26 years
They've been steady on the decline. I mean, first time they haven't qualified for Champions League and whatever amount of years. Constantly. He's signing 1-year extensions. I mean, there's a good chance that all three of those people aren't there
next year
in the summer. I mean,
I think it depends on who they sign as a coach.
It depends who they sign as a coach. It could go really poorly, like it went with Liverpool after Benitez left, and it kind of
you needed a number of years.
Yeah, you spend a lot of years out in the wilderness when those transitions are botched. I mean, you saw with United, like David Moyes.
What the hell?
I'm still
confused.
I'm still confused. Van Gaal wasn't much better. I think it would have been better to bring Van Gaal in immediately.
I think that Arsenal has like one of two options: to A, bring in someone like a Klopp or Tuchel from Dortmund, currently at Dortmund, or
that Leipzig guy.
The Leipzig guy, or someone's lower, like the guy who coaches Burnley right now, Sean Dyche. I don't think he's it, but I'm saying you either go with someone who's younger, more tenacious, more head-on tactics, or you go with someone like a Rafa, who's like a little bit older, has tons of Champions League, like good Champions League and recent Champions League experience under his or her belt. And
what's Newcastle doing this year?
I don't know. But they, or like, you know, you either go young gun or you go with experience for a couple years to fix and get a couple big names. Because a lot of players won't risk going to a team that's A, broken, and has too young of a coach who, oh man, like say next year they lose Lexi Sanchez. They want to sign someone like, say, like Insigne is on the line there. Like Insigne would be a cool signing for Arsenal, that young winger, fantastic at Napoli right now. If I'm Insigne, I don't know, like, do I want to risk going to a team with like a Tuchel of a coach who's what, 35 or something like that, where he's proven that he can do that with the team he was given at Dortmund. He didn't make too many good signings. He sold Ousmane Dembele, and I don't know, like, if I'm a player, it's like, do I risk that and I'm not in their long-term plan, or I'm just a risk that this young coach is taking? Like what if they busted that team? So it's you never know. But I think if Arsenal signs, I don't think that they re-sign either of them.
I don't think that they're one or two signings away from fixing what they have. I mean, they just got Lacazette, beast.
Yeah, he's great.
He isn't starting every game. that midfield, like, I don't know. It's just, they're stinky right now.
Yeah. No confidence. They have no locker room. Yeah. They lost the locker room. Unless you sign.
I've seen it. I've been there.
Or they sign Bale. Like, they do something like they ball out and buy Bale in the offseason, who I know, I personally think he's on the way out.
It just seems like he's one of those players that
Isco took his starting position.
His body just can't.
Yeah, he's injury prone.
He can't handle how he plays, and it's so much fun watching him play. Like when he's on, I mean, it's almost like it's almost a treat now. It's like, oh,
Bale's back,
and when he is back, you have like those two or three games where like you can see he wasn't really in full throttle there. He's still not really confident in his leg, and then it's a month or so of him being back to form, blowing by guys, and then he gets hurt again.
Yep.
Adductor strain, calf strain, thigh injury.
I think it would be cool if you get a player like that on your outside, you replace Alexis Sanchez. You keep Ozil, you have Lacazette and Bale to play through. Bale then is the better, or your bet. You make Bale your player. You make him and Lacazette your player. Then Ozil doesn't need to be in that foreground.
Yeah. But I mean,
I don't think he should stay.
Arsenal has a shit record with injuries.
Watch Juve gets Ozil.
Yeah, why not? There's get everybody. I'm so sick of that.
But you got the Tottenham Arsenal derby. That's gonna be. I don't think it's gonna be that great of a game, actually, now that we have said all these things. you got a Madrid.
It's early too.
You
can wake up for the second half and like interesting.
Atleti, you got the Madrid derby. Same day, Saturday, Atletico against
2:30, 2:45, I want to say.
So that's going to be, I think that that's going to be a potentially season-changing game for Madrid.
Yeah, for Real.
I mean, Real Madrid, yeah, not Real. Atleti, obviously.
Yeah.
And Atleti. They're playing like trash in the Champions League. They're in Chelsea's group with them and Roma.
Chelsea and Roma. And Roma's been run. We'll get to them later.
And I think they have 2 points.
Yeah, they have not been well.
And I don't know, they're sitting a few points above Madrid in the standings by 4, I think, or 2 or 4 or something like that. And I don't know why.
They're in third right now.
Yeah, they're in third right now, basically above Real. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, this is a very important game for both of these teams, A, to get your form back, and B, to obviously pick up some points. And it's not a big stage. The Madrid derby is a big enough stage at this point. Atleti has like solidified themselves as a good goddamn team in Europe over the last like several years.
Been doing great.
But you wonder if they have done a very similar thing to Madrid, not as extreme, but a little dip in their form in the way that they compete against the big teams.
Yeah.
So, again, a third place finish for Atletico Madrid is not bad, but the way that
where they've been living.
Exactly. So, like, but the fact that they're behind Valencia, the fact that they've got 2 points in Europe right now, it's important for them to say, oh, look, we can beat Madrid still. Like, we can beat these big teams. We can We can take the 3 points when it comes down to it, and especially a huge game like this against a battered Real Madrid. And then from the other side
of Isco's hurt too. He left.
That's right.
He left Spain training.
And on the other side, you look at them.
And wasn't Ronaldo saying he was complaining the other day?
Yeah, he was complaining.
He was complaining about like letting players like James leave, and he was like, "We kind of
screwed up."
Yeah, and he doesn't. I mean, you don't really hear him complaining about team moves very often.
No. But that's not good.
Yeah,
it's not good to hear that. You don't hear that, and not for anything. You don't hear that from Madrid, like Real, yeah. play, like at all. You don't hear that from their grounds. Usually, it's only positive things, or they're just gone. Like that's just it.
Yeah.
So I think that if Real wins this game, I think they start to get their form back, especially if Ronaldo himself scores in this game.
Yeah, he needs to just get back. Like,
One of his floating headers where he's in the air for 8 seconds
mm-hmm.
and puts in the back corner on a corner kick. Like, something like that.
Something.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be spectacular. No. Just get see the ball go in the net
yeah.
in a game.
And that's huge. That'd be huge for them. And I'm actually, I'm going to try my best to like watch that game too, because we don't get BN Sports, or I don't have BN Sports, and we always find streams of it. So
yeah, they do such a bad job.
Thank you, Reddit.
I mean, they must be furious that they signed that contract.
Yeah. But
them and Italy. I think Italy is still on BN.
I think they are as well. That's also another. There's also another derby in that league too. Roma Lazio, both teams at 4 and 5.
I want to say it's the same day too. I think all three of these games are on the same exact day, the 18th, right?
Yep. Saturday.
So literally, it goes 7:30 London derby, noon Rome derby,
2:30
Madrid derby.
So I know what I'm doing. Oh, all Saturday. But Roma Lazio, that's going to be a very important game too. They're 1 point from one another. Lazio in fourth right now. Roma in fifth, 27 points. Lazio has scored 10 more goals than Roma has this season. However, Roma only conceded 7. They have the lowest. They have the best defense so far in La Liga. They have conceded the least amount of goals.
I've only seen them in Champions League this year, and they've looked amazing. Edin Dzeko still scoring goals.
Okay, yeah.
El Shaarawy, maybe 22 now.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I said this a while back that he is, not a while back, meaning like in the last like couple months, that he was a super, super underrated winger.
Like he burst on the scene at what, Milan? 17 or 18, he lit it up. And
he did an Alexander Pato thing.
Yeah.
And
RIP in peace.
He's only like 29.
Yeah.
I think he's 30 now. But he is very, very... I mean, first of all, that the game he had against Chelsea last 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
just lights
seen,
out.
I've just been seeing highlights of him.
Yeah.
So, as far as I'm concerned, he's been playing amazing.
So, I think that's another very important game. I'm not sure who is home.
It's home. In Rome.
I know.
That
I think it's Roma's. Roma Stadium.
Insane.
It's in Roma Stadium.
Also, like, ultras are... bonkers too.
Yeah,
they get rowdy.
I think that's also pivotal for both of them. They can, for whoever wins this game, if Lazio wins, they move up to third. They move up to third and would be tied on points with Juve in second, not on goal differential. And for Roma, if they win, they can take third and be 1 point below Juventus. So that's important too. I mean, Juventus. I don't think Juventus has been slipping. But they lost.
The rest of the team, the rest of the league is just getting better.
Yeah, Napoli's playing lights out. They haven't lost yet
Roma's,
in the league.
Roma's been on the cusp for like the last 3 or 4 years, and I was like, yo, they're going to get Totti one more before he leaves.
Yeah.
It's going to be great, and they always fall short. It's awesome seeing Inter playing well. I love Icardi.
I love watching Icardi play.
Stop screwing your teammates' wives.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Never convicted.
Yeah. You're a locker room guy.
Big locker room guy. For both of our teams next week, nothing too big. I'm pretty sure Chelsea plays West Brom. Yeah, West Brom plays Chelsea. Liverpool plays Southampton. Southampton can surprise you.
This game needs to be for Virgil van Dijk. If we win this game, we should get him in. Like, they need to find a way. I need this on paper and ink. If we beat you guys, just give him to us.
Please.
We need him more than you.
We
can give him things that you can't.
Then watch, they'll beat you 2-1.
Yeah, he'll have like a stellar game. And be like, yeah, I've been looking at Spain.
goes to Valencia.
Wins the title.
Yeah, we didn't Unfortunately, it's always the worst off weeks when they got international breaks. But
stinks.
Next week we'll have some recaps for you guys of said games in particular.
Probably gonna be a preview.
Oh yes, that's right. You'll be out of town.
Yeah, we'll do like an actual breakdown of.
Yeah, we'll do like an actual breakdown and anything that happens, anything that happens throughout this week.
We'll talk about the Italy game.
We'll talk about the Italy game. We'll have something to talk about. A little more solidified picture of what the World Cup will look like.
Getting to the pots.
Yep.
What could that second pot just looking
gross? Stacked. That second pot for the World Cup pickings looks almost as good, or potentially as good as the first pot.
Yeah.
So that's gonna be that's a cool indication of how soccer has kind of risen around the world, and then B, how many more countries have had soccer be improved on in the last few years. I mean, Iceland's a perfect example. They're a Cinderella example of it, and it's just a complete overhaul of the sport in the country. So I'm interested to see, because I think this may be one of the more competitive World Cups we've ever seen.
I hope. I mean, and for the ones that I remember, like, a lot of them really... I mean, like, Spain ran show, like, the Euro, World Cup, Euro.
Yep.
Brazil's
been hot cold.
No, I'm just thinking about the World Cup from Brazil and the fact that, like, I mean, obviously, Goats is winner, but I don't remember that being a particularly good World Cup.
The 14 when Germany won?
Yeah.
It was a good World Cup.
Yeah, my memory's all messed up.
I'm hoping that it's going to be a competitive World Cup, and I think that if it is, then it gives me some sort of consolation that the U.S. didn't make it, I guess. If it's that competitive World Cup, at least in my mind, I'll rationalize it by saying, look... Well,
look at how good these teams are. We never could have beat them. Yeah,
we couldn't have beaten fucking Saudi Arabia. Like, what are we doing? But that's some sort of consolation. Looking forward to you guys checking us out.
Download
us. Give us those 5-star reviews. We got a few weeks to get on the new and featured on iTunes. If we do that, we'll be able to do so much more for you guys. We'll actually have like a cool website, not just like the one that I've been coding on the side because I have free time, apparently. Not really, but I do. But we'll get you that. Follow us on Twitter at Room Temp Show. Check us out at roomtempshow.com. We got a few articles on there. We'll be coming to you live on Monday night, tomorrow night, for our next episode of Room Temp Show, the actual show. And yeah, make sure you guys follow us to pay us all the compliments you can.
Retweets, I will pay for retweets.
Yeah, we don't have Twitter ads. That's a whole other story. Yeah. But yeah, make sure you guys check us out. Thanks for listening, guys, and have a good night.
Have a good one, guys.